Kia ora Aotearoa. This week we had a long conversation with David Seymour about his ideological position on wealth and tax. That was for a specially themed episode of the podcast out later today. We also took the chance, though, to ask him some policy questions about the tax rebate for landlords, whether the government's on track to keep its tax cut promises, and how it might incorporate ACT's tax plan to deliver on those promises. Because that's all been in the headlines this week, we thought we'd share that section with you as a shortcast. Here it is. You've just given landlords a tax cut, albeit a watered down one on what you'd originally promised. Why do you think that wealthier people should get even more money?
I promised I wouldn't have a tantrum about gotcha journalism, but let's just, I hate to keep saying this, but let's unpack that.
What in that is gotcha journalism?
Why do you hate poor people? Look, in terms of, first of all, who's getting the money? Well, I just give you the example of tobacco tax. Now, it's the retailer, it's your local dairy, who pays the excise tax to the customs department. But who pays the cost? Well, to some extent, it's them. They would probably charge more for the cigarettes if they didn't have to pay so much tax. But most of that tax is going to be paid by the purchaser. And I would make the argument that, people will argue because there's not really good data on this, and it depends on the market conditions, and it probably varies from region to region and so on. But this is not just a tax cut for the landlords. They may be the one that pays the tax, but they're not the ones that were paying the cost.
Okay, what evidence do you have that landlords will lower rents?
Well, in every other area of the economy, when you drop a tax, the seller and the buyer, who were both subject to the taxed transaction, a sales tax at least, end up splitting the benefits of that tax cut. Same with an income tax cut. Partly goes to the employer, it's partly to the employee.
Okay, so when will they start seeing their rents go down by? So landlords are getting 80% back from April 1st. Will it be immediate? Should they be giving you a call in a few months in July if nothing's trickled down or bucketed down since then?
Well, for one thing, most people are already on fixed-term tenancies, so this law is not going to change the current rent that you're paying.
So it doesn't help renters for, at least a year?
Well, what it will do is people might choose to move. People that take up new rentals are going to see a more competitive rental market. But again, I know there's people that
What evidence do you have of that?
Of what? Sorry?
The rents are going to go down, that there is actually going to be a downward pressure. You point to the excise example, but what evidence do you have that landlords are actually going to pass on those benefits?
Well, only all the economic evidence of every other marketplace that's had a tax added or subtracted in the history of the economic theory.
But that since the interest deductibility was scrapped by Labor, looking at Auckland rents, you say that they went up as a result of Labor's policy, but they only really went up in line with inflation. Sure, they spiked, I think it was 8%, then 5.6%, but that was roughly in line with inflation sitting around 7%. So in real terms, they didn't actually increase.
Well, across New Zealand, median rents from September 2021 to the end of last year went up 21%. Inflation, if I recall, was in between sort of 5 to 7 each year over that period. So that would suggest they went up significantly faster. But I'm sure what you're about to say is, yeah, sure, but it wasn't the tax that did that. It also depends on the amount of people migrating, which was low during that period, now much higher. It also depends on the amount of building, which was relatively high during that period. If you look at the building consent numbers, people say that construction is really slowing down now, which would put it up. It also depends on general inflation in the economy, which is slowing down, which you would think would make rents lower. So, once you juggle all these factors, what I say to people is, look, if you know what the price of anything is going to be in a year's time, then you shouldn't be doing whatever you're doing now. You should be on the share market getting rich.
Do you stake your job on rents going down, Nicola? I know that a lot of people don't like that kind of questioning, but Nicola Willis, she staked her job on National delivering its tax cuts. We know she will find a way to do it because of that kind of extremity. Do you stake your job on the fact that rents will go down by X period as a result of these interest deductibility changes?
Well, because I just gave you three examples of factors that I can't control, I'd be a mug to bet on something that is largely out of control. What I can...
We will never really know whether the interest deductibility changes have any bearing on rent or not because of all those other factors you've just outlined.
Well, what we know is that if you hold all the other variables constant, then charging less tax will have a benefit that will be split between tenants
They're not going to be
and
constant,
landlords.
That's right.
You know, anyone who doesn't believe that, I mean, you go and argue with the entire economics profession for the last 100 years, that's what they've found. If you want to talk about what I can guarantee is that we've delivered the reduction in taxes and we've also made the income tax system more consistent, because just remember, if you invest in a farm, in a commercial property, buy shares, run a company, whatever you do, then your interest costs are a deductible expense. You can deduct that from your taxable income. What was crazy is to say the one area of the economy that we really need to perform for people who are hard up, that is rental housing. You know, 25,000 people in motels right now. We decided to treat that differently and punitively. That was nuts, and we've fixed it.
It was the first broken promise out of the coalition, both of the coalition agreements. Congratulations. Should we be worried that the government, and National especially, can't seem to add up? The policy's costing $800 million more than National had budgeted.
Well, it's costing almost exactly what ACT budgeted, and of course the policy...
A couple of hundred million dollars more than what ACT budgeted.
Yeah, and once again, if you ask people a year ago, what do you think interest rates will be today, they probably thought that they would have started to go down by now. For a variety of reasons, the Reserve Bank's kept it high. I mean, a month ago, Sharon Zolner was scaring the whole country saying they could go up again. The policy has a bigger impact on the government's finances because people can deduct more because interest rates are higher, but that also means that you're giving more relief to the rental property sector. So I don't think it's fair to say that the Nats got it wrong. Their policy was well-costed. Ours was well-costed, but for the interest changes, and the government's policy is closer to ours than theirs. So, I think that's reasonable.
Those are the landlord tax cuts, as Labor's labelled them, the general tax cuts for the rest of the country we're going to learn about in May's budget. Are you sceptical that National will have enough money to pay for those?
Well, it's not really National, it's the government.
The government. Are you sceptical that the government will have enough money to pay for those?
No, I think, we make commitments and we bring them through. And if you want to talk about, ACT's commitments and the coalition agreement around, mortgage interest deductibility, certainly true. People say, it should be 60% retrospectively for the current tax year, and we didn't do it. That's true. But we just looked at it and said, how much complexity, how much benefit, what's the right thing for New Zealand?
Okay.
And we said, we're not going to do that. I think that's you congratulate me on the first broken promise. I think you should congratulate us on, the first adult decision, in fact.
Okay, so do you think the National, or do you think the government will have to make an adult decision as well around the tax cuts, so perhaps delaying them to be able to pay for them? Because there's been a few things now. There's this $800 million not budgeted for, the welfare changes aren't netting as much, the foreign buyers tax isn't going ahead. So will National perhaps have to delay, or the government, have to delay those tax cuts and make another adult decision?
Well, put it this way, I mean, we're one of three partners in the coalition, and we've signed up to do those tax cuts, and we're committed to delivering them. Obviously, you start as your three parties in your coalition, you make your commitments, then you go through your budget process and say, can we afford it? Obviously, there's some challenges. The economy is softer than people hoped. And when I go out and talk to people in shops, they say that the toughest summer they've had for a long time. Talk to people in construction, they say things are slowing down fast. All of those things impact on the amount of tax that the government collects. And equally, if people aren't working and there's more people on benefits, there's more cost there, and there's also inflation and interest rates affecting debt repayments and so on. So, we're facing some headwinds, but we're still committed.
So you're managing expectations a bit there as well, aren't you? And you've got something in your coalition agreement with National that says that its fiscal plan may be subject to amendment in response to significant new information or events, which you have just outlined. So that could be the case with the tax cuts. Should we be expecting a delay in the implementation of those tax cuts?
Put it this way, I'm one of the budget ministers, and there is no talk of not delivering those tax cuts this year. We're all signed up and committed to doing it.
Without borrowing a cent.
Well, the reality is that we've inherited books where the government is borrowing every year for the next 3 years, regardless. So that unfortunately is baked into the forecast. And even ACT, which, you know, in many cases, I always say, look, the government's not going as far as ACT would, but it's going farther than it would without ACT. But even our alternative budget ran deficits for the first 2 years because basically the government massively increased expenditure, kicked off inflation, kicked off interest rates, which impacts the interest we pay and so on.
Will the government borrow to pay for those tax cuts?
No, I don't think that you will see more borrowing than was otherwise expected in order to reduce the tax rates.
You also had in your coalition negotiations, sorry, we're going really long here, but it's interesting. And assuming you don't break this promise too, you got National to consider the concepts of your income tax policy as a pathway to deliver those tax cuts. Are they taking any of your concepts on board, a flatter tax system?
Yeah, they are. So obviously there's a bit of a mix going on. But, you know, they have sincerely and in good faith modelled what it would be like to do it our way. Make it flatter. And we've basically gone back to them and said, there's the modelling. We hope that we end up doing it this way as a government. Whether or not we do will be a decision by all three parties and the budget ministers. But I feel like they've made good on that promise already by taking it very seriously and putting it up as one of the options.
So could there be a reduction in the number of income tax brackets as a mechanism to deliver those tax cuts?
It's possible. We haven't finalised what that looks like. You know, is it likely? That depends on how those debates internally are going. And I you know, have to be confidentiality. I'm learning. You know, Tover, I used to just tell you everything. Now I got to think about which things I can't say.
That's why you're quoting Pluto ad nauseum in the midst of an interview instead.
Are you thinking of Pluto or Plato?
Plato.
Pluto used to be a planet and is still a cartoon dog. Plato was a Greek philosopher.
Thank you.
No problem.
That's going to be one of those bits of the interview that just gets judiciously edited out. I suspect I'm looking at my producer pleadingly. In your fantasy tax system, that would exacerbate inequality, wouldn't it? From a marginal perspective, poorer people end up paying more than wealthier people.
No, not even close. If you look at where we are right now, and these are, I think, 2019 figures, but you know the top 5% of income taxpayers pay a third of all income tax. The bottom 48% of income taxpayers pay 8% of all income tax. So basically, 5% pay a third and half pay only 8%. So already we have a tax system where, you know, a huge number of taxpayers pay almost nothing, where a tiny number of taxpayers, you know, carry a third of the income tax bill. And then in between that top 5% of payers and that bottom half, there's sort of the middle class Kiwi battlers who are basically doing it tough, but not as tough as that 5%. So
I know that you'll say you give a tax credit to low and middle income earners, but on your tax bracket, looking at your tax bracket changes alone when you get to the kind of final makeup, the three, a minimum wage worker is $720 a year worse off, whereas someone like you would be, using your income, an extra $13,000 a year better off as a result of your changes.
So a couple of things about that. First of all, we give them $980 in tax credit, so that $720 gets soaked pretty quickly. So actually, low-income earners are better off under our system. Second of all, it's the most popular thing in the world, or, you know, what would a politician's salary mean? But what you've got to remember is your starting point. And your starting point is that if you are earning, say, $160,000 in New Zealand, you're paying almost a third of that in tax. So you're actually paying about $48,000, $50,000 on an MP salary. Any tax cut you have is gonna give a benefit to someone on a higher salary. There's no question about that. But that's not unusual. It's just a matter of maths. The question is, do we want a system that is simpler to administer, that is fairer, doesn't have tall poppy syndrome built into it, where every time you do better, we whack you a bit harder for each dollar? And do we want a system that sends a message to the world that New Zealand's a place full of aspiration, that wants to be competitive, that wants people to come here and make a success of themselves?
And that also potentially risks entrenching inequality and poverty.
Well, let me put it another way. If that's what you think, then you must also believe that the best way to deal with inequality and poverty is basically to tax people, because some people will just always do well and other people always won't, so you've got to give money to them. The way I put it is, what are we doing to make it easier to build a home, connect it to infrastructure, get the building materials so that people actually see a ladder of opportunity to live in a place where you can have a part of New Zealand to yourself? You know, the amount of skills that you get from the education system, real hard skills that allow you to be useful to the world and trade value with other people, you know, that really matters. And having a welfare system where basically for the last 10 years both Labor and National have competed to make it more of an acceptable lifestyle to be on a benefit, that traps people in poverty. So yep, if taxes is your way of getting a more equal society, good luck to you, but I'd rather do education, housing and welfare.
Thank you so much for your time, David. Always a pleasure speaking with you.
Not a problem, Tova. Great time.
Cheers. Thank you for listening, and a reminder that you can hear the rest of that interview with David Seymour later today. Ka kite.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.